Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in. Time for KER Politics. Going to take a little bit of a different technique this week. We're going to give you a bit of a preview of the show, and we're also going to give you a summary of what we think are the important events that happened this week. Jimmy, in my opinion, the most important event was the announcement by Ron DeSantis. What do you think?
I think that was a very important event, of course, that for the primary, important for Republican voters, and an opportunity for the left to go nuts. And of course, we're seeing the infighting of already between Republicans as well. So we'll see how this turns out. But the kickoff didn't go very well for Ron DeSantis, unfortunately for him, on Twitter Spaces.
I wonder, that's a shame, you know, given the fact that he's got an awful lot of support, in my opinion, from Elon Musk. I'm surprised that happened. Jimmy, any comments?
Well, I don't know if it's support. He just wanted to do it off Twitter, and Twitter is now becoming the primary focal point for conservative voices in the mainstream media. So that's an important place to do it. The fact that there were technical issues that was interesting. Maybe on purpose, maybe accidental. Maybe Twitter just wasn't ready for it. So we'll see. We'll see how it turns out as he goes forward. But I'll tell you the big problem, I think, with a lot of Republicans and a large number of them are not comfortable with the funders that convinced Ron DeSantis to step into the ring. I think they're very concerned about the influence from corporate donors and from potential, you know, Bush and Romney type supporters. People are frustrated with the system, and I'm afraid for Ron DeSantis, a lot of people equate him with the system and really don't look at him as having the right opportunity, this being the right time for him to go forward with a candidacy.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's going to work really well, but we don't know because it's too early, and of course the Department of Justice is still out with knives after Trump.
Yeah, I don't know. I still think Trump is going to be the man, and I think if the Republicans really wanted to be very, very efficient in this particular situation, I know it could blow up if they followed my advice, but I think a Trump-DeSantis ticket I think it would just win hands down.
I think it would be a very powerful ticket if it worked out that way. A lot of people are concerned that, you know, they wouldn't work, that DeSantis would not work for Trump, but I'm not so convinced that's the case. You know, remember in the campaign in 1980, for those that were around back then, George H.W. Bush and Ronald Reagan, you know, pretty spirited debates, and Reagan picked Bush as his vice presidential candidate, and he won again, and Bush won in 1988, 8 years later, and that would be a very good opportunity for Ron DeSantis to run in the vice presidential seat and then run in 2028.
Yeah,
I think he will anyway, and maybe that's why he's testing the waters now to see how to run a campaign. But, you know, he ran a good campaign in Florida. It was supported by Trump. You know, it was an important campaign supported by Trump, and it was a big influence. So a lot of people are looking at him from Florida and other Republicans saying, hey, stay in your lane, stay as governor, keep Florida straight, keep doing the right thing, and wait your turn. We'll see what happens. We are going to talk later in the show about some of the, you know, we've got David Horowitz in the next segment, and he's got some strong opinions on what's happening right now around the country. And then in the last two segments, we're going to talk to Dr. Tim Murphy, who is a former congressman. Yeah,
and he's a very good guy.
Yeah, he's going to talk about his new book, The Jesus Cure, and really the psychological problems we're facing out there in the world. And I think that leads us to one of these other issues for the week. A very big issue. We know what happened with Anheuser-Busch and the boycott against the Dylan Volmaney transgender advertising and how quickly that really spiraled out of control. Bud Light and Anheuser-Busch sales are down over 25%, even more than that. They've lost billions of dollars in market capitalization. And now we've got Target, which has been promoting transgender children's clothes and Satanist like paraphernalia, and really pushing the pride agenda. And of course, now that backlash is happening very rapidly, and Target has lost over $9 billion in market capitalization just this week. Yeah. Those are really big issues that are facing these corporations, and a good signal, I think, that Americans are beginning to see beyond what the media is shoving down their throat and what the censors are trying to protect them from.
Well, give me an example, Dave. Give me an example, Jimmy. I got Horowitz on my mind. He's kind of my hero in the ultra conservative world. Good guy, written a lot of books. But anyway, Jimmy, I'm surprised that Target followed suit. Were you? When I say follow suit, I mean followed beer. Are you?
I was a bit surprised. They'd already put in place the marketing campaign, so they were committed to it, and they already had this material for the June, quote, Pride Month on the shelves.
Yeah.
So they had planned it before. It was probably hard to stop the process, and they weren't sure. I imagine they didn't realize the backlash. And what's happened very rapidly is some of their efforts to pull some of that material, especially the child-focused materials, off the shelf and attempt to somewhat appease and apologize. But in reality, they're not doing anything seriously to change their direction. And that's a gamble, I believe. It's a corporate gamble to continue to support the Pride agenda. But what we're seeing is a national gamble from the Democratic Party supporting these very progressive, ideologically driven gender issues. And I don't think it's going to do well for them. I don't think it did well for Democrats in Virginia in the last governor's election. I don't think it did well in Florida when Ron DeSantis was reelected. I don't think it's done well for the Disney Corporation. In fact, they're having to cut back on their employees and set cost savings. Their market share is down as well. So I'm not sure that these companies are figuring it out, and I am a bit surprised that Target was so far along in this that they managed to step on it so badly.
Well, they really did. You know, I'm fairly surprised in that sense also. But, you know, Target is pretty much of a diversified retailer, whereas Anheuser-Busch is no way diversified. They make one thing and one thing only, and they bet the sales of their number one product, Bud Light. They bet that on going to the female spokesperson. I just don't understand how anybody could do that.
Yeah, I'm not going to call Dylan Mulvaney female at all. I'm not going to play that game. It's a guy that's dressing up like a woman.
Well, no, I realize
yeah,
that.
Yeah, no, I'm just commenting on that. I just want to make sure that I'm clear and people understand my position on it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not playing this game. You know, don't tell me you somehow have changed your chromosomes in your body. It's not possible.
Yeah. So. I, for the life of me, Jimmy, simply don't understand why the Democrats have taken that tact. I mean, that is more than just a little bit far left. That's way out left. And it'll be really interesting for me, who is a very avid election watcher, to see how 24 is going to turn out, I got to tell you.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about yesterday in our daily editorial about the potential corruption and the information that was out there available on voter influence in the 2020 and 2022 elections and the bad registrations and some of the legalities here. And that's the problem, Al. It comes right down to not who votes, but who counts the votes and how they're counted. And that's a big, difficult problem right now that we're facing in America, and we're being pushed
I understand that. Okay, we've talked about the show. We've talked about the week. Let's get into the show right now. First guest coming on right after a commercial break is David Horowitz.
your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Come in time for KER Politics. We're going to devote the first half of the program today to a guy who I think is, well, I know he's one of my heroes in this business. His name is David Horowitz. David has been very active in conservative issues over the years. He's been on the show numerous times. We're going to talk a little bit, first of all, today about David's book. So I will be reading it here, but I have an idea. I know exactly what David's going to be talking about. The name of the book is The Final Battle. David, you want to talk about that book a little bit, sir?
Sure. The subtitle is The Next Election Could Be the Last. This is the third book I've written on how the Democrat Party is driving towards a one-party state. You can just see it in their treatment of Trump. Trump is the only American president ever who increased his vote for a second term, and he did it by 11 million votes. And they demonized everybody who supports Trump as a white supremacist, white nationalist, insurrectionist. These are disgusting lies. There's no evidence whatsoever. Joe Biden keeps repeating the lie that Trump said the neo-Nazis in Charlottesville or wherever it was were good people. He never said that, and he denounced them. And it's all, you know, it's on videotape. So, you know, Joe Biden, egregious, brazen liar in the history of our country. He's a criminal. And the Democrat Party is now a criminal party. We're supposed to have an independent Justice Department that applies the law equally to everybody. But this is, under Merrick Garland, the Justice Department is just a weapon in the hands of Hunter Biden, basically, to protect Hunter and to persecute anybody who challenges the Justice Department. Like, there's this whistleblower, and all the whistleblowers are in danger. We're in a semi-fascist state now. What distinguishes fascism is its use of corporate entity to do its dirty work. Nazi Germany, IG Farben, and Standard Oil. And we have the same thing here. They're supporters of the Democrats and carry out censorship and persecution. We just today... Stuart Rhodes to 18 years in jail. He wasn't even at the Capitol, and the Capitol protests on January 6th were tea parties compared to what the left did in the summer of 2020. So we don't have justice in America anymore. We don't have First Amendment freedom. It's just terrible. There's a professor just recently, he was 22 years a law professor, tenured. And then he wrote an article for The Hill defending Clarence Thomas. And they sent police into his classroom to arrest him and then fired him for defending Clarence Thomas. This isn't America anymore. It's a nightmare. My book documents all this, the final battle. The reason I say that the next election could be a little last is because the Democrats have tried to fix the last and have three elections and successfully fixed two of them. And the evidence for that is pretty overwhelming. But for the Democrats, if you criticize an election and you're a Republican, you're a traitor. You're an insurrectionist. Whereas David, the Democrats have challenged every election of a Republican in this century and gone to the well of the House and tried to decertify the election.
Hey, I wanted to ask you, David. So there are three big points I think you put in your book. One is the double standard in the Justice Department you're talking about. The fact that citizenship is irrelevant in America right now, and then this use of cancel culture in a combination with the media and of course law enforcement intimidation, as you're talking about with this professor. How do we overcome this? What do you have?
This isn't meant personally, but we should stop calling it a double standard. It's much worse than that. Stuart Rhodes just got 18 years in jail for speech. You know, he thought that Trump was doing nothing and that people should protest. That's what he got 18 years in jail for. The leaders of Black Lives Matter burned, killed dozens of people, and eventually it was thousands and tens of thousands. And they've stolen $100 million in contributions that were supposed to go to help black people, but went to buy them and their friends' mansions.
Yeah.
And they're walking scot-free. That's a little worse than a double standard.
No, I agree with you completely. I agree. But...
And look what they've done to Trump. I mean, how many...
Yeah.
Half the impeachments in the history of the country are attempts to impeach Trump, but they're nothing wrong.
Yeah, over bogus arguments.
Just the fact that they call him a white supremacist. He was a liberal before he ran against the Democrats.
Yeah.
He was a guest at the Clintons' wedding. He won the NAACP awards for crying out tears. He stood up for school choice for inner city kids for 20 years. That's Trump's sins. His sin is that he threatened the Democrat stranglehold on America's inner cities. Every injustice that blacks suffer or Hispanics suffer in our inner cities, every injustice Democrats are 100% responsible for, because they control all the inner cities, which is why we have riots and crime waves in all the major cities in America.
How do we turn it around? What?
Well, start calling them what they are. They're gangsters. Joe Biden, let's see. Well, what do people say about Joe Biden? Oh, that he may be compromised. He's a traitor.
Biden
family has grown rich beyond its wildest dreams by taking bribes from foreign powers and allowing them to influence our foreign policy. He's China's biggest ally, and the power that wants to replace us, a ruthless power that just, when did they kill 9 million people with the virus that they created and spread?
Yeah, not to mention.
We're not living in reality. So the first step is that people should stop, being afraid to call a spade a spade, and should fight back. Don't try to protect them. I just saw it the other day.
Oh, we got about 30 seconds left, just so you know.
Okay. Well, Pamela Jayapal, a communist head of the Progressive Caucus in the Democratic Party, was saying that the Republicans are responsible for the border crisis that Joe Biden created single-handedly. And the Republican response was that the Democrats are obfuscating Republicans. Obfuscating. How many voters know what obfuscating means?
Yeah.
It's like...
Hey, David, you have some really strong opinions. You've got a great, great position on things. We really appreciate that. Thank you for all this information.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
KER Politics, segment number 7. Hope you guys enjoyed the news. We have a great guest right now on the show. His name is Tim Murphy, Dr. Tim Murphy. Tim has written a book that I have read. Jimmy has read the majority of it. It's called The Christ Cure. 10 biblical ways to heal, from trauma, tragedy, and PTSD, post-traumatic stress disease. I got to tell you, in reading this book, I was incredibly, incredibly taken by common sense that was in the book, written by a professional in the field of mental, I guess I would have to say, diseases, which Tim Murphy certainly is. Tim, tell us a little bit about the book, but let me say first, I just remembered that the majority of the profits of this book are going to a program that Tim has instigated among our armed service people, who he feels, and I certainly agree that this book could really, really help. It's available at any bookstore. It's available at Amazon, which is where I got my copy of it. Why don't you start out, Tim, telling us a little bit about the program that you started?
Sure. Well, I'm a psychologist by training, and that includes 4 decades in the field and also 8 years serving in the Navy as a Navy psychologist, primarily out of Bethesda Naval Hospital, which became Walter Reed Hospital, and some time on a little bit of time with some aircraft carriers, a little bit of time mostly observing because they wouldn't let me near other things with Navy SEAL teams. But from all that, a lot of my work is focused on dealing with people who've had trauma. And about 70% of the population will face some major life-threatening or life-observing trauma in their life, and about 20% lingering symptoms that really begin to get in the way of their life. And those are symptoms such as sleeplessness, flashbacks, bad memories, broken relationships, depression, anxiety, and really struggling day to day. And in working on these things for years and using a lot of standard psychological approaches to handle that, we know that whether you're in the military, some less than half people in the military go to the Veterans Administration afterwards, or policeman or fireman or a paramedic or just a regular person who's had trauma in your life. Counseling helps, the talk therapy, and medication is given to many people, but medicine can change how you feel, but it doesn't change how you think. And I also recognize there's plenty of literature, plenty of support that says those who have religion and faith in their life do much better. Their prognosis is far better, primarily because they see hope on the horizon. And that's a struggle for people who have faced trauma in their life and deal with doubts and guilt and shame and wondering about forgiveness. Well, as I was looking through things, and quite frankly, in my own life, my own struggles with depression, I started searching for answers in the Bible, always a good place to go, and really was intrigued by the life and traumas of the Apostle Paul. Most of the New Testament was written by him. And he faced incredible traumas, being beaten with rods 3 times, whipped 39 lashes 5 times, run out of town repeatedly, assaulted, robbed, shipwrecked, bitten by poisonous snakes, sentenced to death, time in Roman prisons, and I'm just getting started. And in reading about him and of him, I thought, well, this man must have had tremendous post-traumatic stress, but he didn't. And I also looked, well, somebody must have written a book about him, and nobody did. So the result is, over a lot of research, looking through this, is a book that talks about not only the Apostle Paul, but many biblical characters who faced some of the worst traumas we cannot even imagine, as well as contemporary people, and plugging it also into psychological research to say, what can we learn from these people who have not just recovered, but have thrived from their trauma, not despite their trauma, but because of their trauma? There's lessons in here that I want to say that this is a book filled with hope, that we no longer have to go around saying, I can never get over this, I can't heal. I believe we can, and this is the book that's the result of that.
Tim, I think a very important thing to talk about right now is our society is going through a tremendous amount of challenges, and it appears to a significant increase in emotional distress. And of course, and it's related to politics, it's related to COVID lockdowns. How do you see us get, as people's faith is actually diminishing, we're looking at fewer people that have faith. How do you see us moving more towards what you're talking about now? How do you see society, and what do we need to do to actually push us in the right direction to kind of overcome some of these challenges?
Well, over the last few decades, people have gotten comfortable with the secular world. We have food on our table, clothes on our back, warmth and cool in our house. We've gotten used to that. And focus of many people now is what entertainment you can find on TikTok and just keeping yourself going in spurts of 10 to 30 seconds and fooling ourselves into thinking we are happy. But we're being hypnotized into a life where we think we have comfort. Yet despite all that, depression rates and anxiety rates in this country have doubled, particularly among adolescents and young adults and the elderly. Suicide rates have climbed. Drug overdose rates have climbed. And drug deaths have climbed. We are a country that many people are feeling despair. and the opium of the people of just being entertained is not working. And yet, despite all this, and despite the way the secular media continues to push back and saying, let's not allow these things to happen, let's keep religion out of schools, keep religion out of everything else, what's happening is there is still this undercurrent which is growing. When you look at some of the incredibly popular movies out there, the whole series called The Chosen, the revival that took place in all these places too, that there was growth among people. And when churches, when religion is being attacked by a secular world, oddly enough, it starts to grow stronger. You can see this throughout history. I see this as, regardless of what the numbers are doing, we have to look at this, not saying, well, are our churches full? But the question is, are our hearts full with the Lord? And this is what it's going to bring about healing. It's going to take the word of mouth from person to person, much like it was in the days of Rome, when Roman emperors and Caesar were trying to kill off Christians. We cannot do this on a lot of media because it won't be talked about, but it is there, and it is the way to healing. And my book is written as a guidebook to the broken and the people who love them, to give them an opportunity to learn how do we bring these things together and help with our healing.
Yeah. Tim, I'd like to ask you a question. We're down to about 2 minutes here, by the way, before we have to take a commercial break. Can you tell us real quickly, you were a member of Congress for a number of years, and then you decided to take a different turn. Why was that?
Well, I was, quite frankly, I won two elections as state senator, and then I won 8 elections as a congressman. I was away from home about 25 years, and while I was in Congress, I actually joined the Navy, too, so I was away from home even more.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, having grown up in a home of an alcoholic father who was pretty fairly physically abusive, I pushed aside my own depression, my own struggles, and always thought, if I could achieve just a little bit more, maybe I could accept myself. And you know what? It doesn't work. It goes with the Bible saying, to have won the whole world and to have lost your soul. And I had to come to terms with that. I was losing my family. And as painful as it was, my wife and I said, you know what? I got to get out of here. And so I left Congress. I worked on my marriage. I worked on my family. I'm so thankful for that. We're better than ever. But and now my message is to help other people who are struggling. Let other people take care of the country. I'm there, but we have to take care of our families and our souls first.
I think that's a really important message right now, especially with so many people being concerned. At the same time, we need to get more people involved in what's happening to kind of do a course correction for the ship, right? Get us going back in the right direction. So
that's right.
We're gonna break here in just a minute for our last segment, and then we'd love to, I think, to have you come back and kind of follow up with some of those questions on how we go forward in a, both mentally and in a political way.
You betcha. Stick around, you guys. We're going to be right back with some very great news from Tim Murphy. Stick around. Welcome back. We are chatting with Dr. Tim Murphy, the author of a book, Christ Cure. I have read the book. Jimmy has read the book. We highly, highly recommend it. After you listen to what Tim has to say, go out and buy a copy. You're going to be like donating money to helping our armed service people keep their heads straight. Jimmy, take over, bud.
Sure. Yeah. So, Representative Murphy, your commitment to not only the nation through your service in the Navy, but also to Congress, and of course your commitment to your family. I think those are really, really important statements for people to listen to. Your book, The Christ Cure, I think is something that people should read to begin spreading the word of how we can get out of this negative position that we're in right now in our nation. It's and to me, it's somewhat unbelievable. And I was wondering about, as a psychologist, as someone that actually kind of studies this and looks and has an idea of where we should go, some of the things that we're facing right now in America with social media for our children, the information overload, of course, the censorship, but some of these ideas, the ideologies that are being pushed on our children, the gender ideology, and this huge push in sports to make them equal to everything, the equity principles. How do you believe that's affecting us as a nation, but in particular, our youth?
I think it's very damaging what we're doing. We've known for years and years and years of research on children. Their minds are not even developed. Their brains aren't really fully developed until into their mid-20s, and the brain continues to develop. Up until that time, kids and teenagers can be smart with some logic, but they're still run by their emotional system in their brain, the limbic system, and particularly young children, so preteens and down. And that's why we have laws. You can't drink till you're 21. You can't vote till you're 18. You can't be in the service until you're 18. You can't even get a tattoo till later in life. But when we push on children, you can choose your gender. It's fluid. Chromosomes mean nothing. Science is important, but we're going to ignore that with chromosomes. We're confusing children and completely ignoring the science of the development of the human brain. Now, I have a grandchild, and the other day, for last week, she wants me to call her some of the names. She wants to pretend she's a duck. Now, that doesn't mean we're going to take her down and throw her in the pond. But some people would see that. Well, let her. I don't care if she explores the world of imagination. But when we tell children that what they're thinking, and then adults project their own thoughts on this, and then mutilate children with hormones and with castration and with mastectomy when they are preteens and teens, I see that as horrific. Now, when adults are adults, they want to make their choice, they can make their choices. But there's no way we should be looking at these things in children and assuming they can think through things, because they're still run by their emotions. Those emotions are fluid. They change. And we need to respect the development of kids as they go on. Now, I should say this, too. There was some study that said, oh, but only 1% of people change their mind. That's not true. That's a survey that was done, I think, out of Canada. That was a survey of people they could find when they went back 5 years later. They didn't go back to those people in their 20s and 30s. They went back when they were still young. And yet, here's another thing that happens. There's a higher suicide rate and depression rate among people both before and after any kind of physical surgical changes. So it doesn't change things for many of them. Some studies say, oh, yes, they do. Those are oftentimes done by surgeons in those studies, but looking at certain people. But if the suicide rates are higher too, why would they be higher if everybody was happy? So there's so many things I'm saying. This is not just there, but the whole issue of subjectivity. There's no truth anymore. You know, truth gives people stability. Love and truth are the key things that help us have stability. But when everything is permitted, nothing is forbidden, and there is no stability for people to return psychologically to some sense. That's why I like to go back to the Bible. A couple thousand years of this, these lessons of how people struggled and came around and how the Lord can help us in our lives heal. That's an answer that, quite frankly, most psychologists don't know how to talk about with people, and we ought to be teaching them how to work on these issues rather than just work on saying, let's have kids have some mutilation surgery.
Yeah, that's right. Dr. Murphy, I just want to say one thing. I attend a men's group once a week where we bring up topics that are, similar to that. This is a pretty sophisticated group of guys, and we talk about a lot of what we talk about on this particular program. And it just so happened that yesterday we talked about what are the motivators, what really motivates mankind. And, something that I have learned from doing this program is that, believe it or not, power, I think, is the biggest motivator. And that, I think, the seeking of power is the reason that our society is getting so misdirected right now. The average politician, and I know a few politicians, on a personal level, and these guys, they're really good guys, do exactly what you did. They find another line of work when they realize all they're doing is striving for power. They find another line of work, and they really make a difference in society when they do that. Can you comment on that idea for me?
Well, I know when I was in Congress and the state senate, I was really focusing a lot on healthcare reform, particularly in the mental health area. We really shortchanged. I mean, people talk about mental health, but very little is done about it. I was the author of legislation at the head of the National Institute of Mental Health that was the most significant legislation, at least in the last 50 years and probably in the last century or two in the United States, to provide real care for people who are mentally ill, particularly the seriously mentally ill. Much of that bill was passed. We didn't get everything we needed, but everything we needed was something, everything we wanted. It had some levels of there, but some of it was watered down. But as far as members go, I think there's a lot of well-intentioned people. But in the U.S. Congress, in the House of Representatives, where you're one of 435 people, it's hard to have a big impact. Think about it. If you had a football team with 435 members on it, yeah, there's some people that move to the front, a lot of people move to the back, but it's tough. It's also a place where you function best if you're humble, and it's hard to do that because in the midst of all this, you're being attacked from all sides, particularly now from the media, from people who stalk you. I had people in my front yard with cameras. I had people putting graffiti in on my office. I had someone else with death threats against me. It is emotionally, mentally, physically very difficult job, and people say, well, you guys are all rich and you have these things. No, these are everyday people. I believe that many are trying to do the right thing, but you get this tsunami of other things overwhelm you. That being the case, I think it is valuable when people do that to go back out to work, to contribute back to society. As I say, go back to your day job and what you're meant to do. I think there's a value for that.
I think it's quite interesting that you bring up the the challenges to go ahead and step up and represent, and of course, we're seeing a lot of Americans probably just think and have thought for many years that it just goes along, and they've got those impressions of the rich Congress members or the leaders, the elite. What they don't realize is that they're just people. They go forward, and then for someone to step up, the amount of pressure and the types of things that you're talking about that happened to you and that we are seeing in a tremendous, tremendous push by political powers and legal powers to silence people's voices right now. How do people step up to actually take responsibility to try to make it a better community or better society under all that pressure? I mean, what a challenge. And, I got to applaud you for actually stepping up and doing it. And I know it actually really, really hurt you as well. Yeah. Some of the things that came up over time. And of course, all of us are human beings. So it is difficult to see how we overcome this and how people continue to strive to do what's right for the society.
Well, in the short time we have, let me just say this, to be an informed voter, most people don't vote and most people are not informed voters. Let members of whatever elected offices know what value you have, what you want to see pass, what you want to go on. Talk to them, make sure there's accountability in conversation, not threats, but do those things. And I do hope that those who also are out there who are struggling, you don't have to wait for government to do it for you. One of the reasons I wrote this book is to empower people to do things on their own, to learn government's not going to save you psychologically. You have to do this. Follow the principles that I teach about and follow those of Lord teaching us too.
Yeah, former Congressman Tim Murphy, psychologist, commander in the United States Navy. Really appreciate you coming on the show. And of course, people go out there and take a look at The Christ Cure, his book, and get it on Amazon. And
I mentioned my website is drtimmurphy.com, where I put podcasts and blogs. That's drtimmurphy.com.
Tim, we'll put all of that information on our website. Many thanks.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.